Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Tanya Sanerb on behalf of appellants, the Tongass Conservation Society, and others. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time this morning for rebuttal, please. There are three issues that I'm going to focus on this morning. First, contrary to the National Environmental Policy Act and Ninth Circuit precedent, the Forest Service failed to disclose and explicitly respond to leading scientist concerns over wolf mortality in the project area of the Logjam project. Second, and also contrary to Ninth Circuit precedent, the Forest Service failed to analyze the cumulative impacts of future projects in conjunction with the Logjam project. And third, the Forest Service made arbitrary decisions with respect to wolves and deer in approving the Logjam project under the forest plan. Turning first to the National Environmental Policy Act.
You actually want to establish that it was arbitrary and capricious to think that the plan adequately protected the wolves and the deer.
No, Your Honor, we do not seek to in any way challenge the terms of the forest plan, rather the Forest Service's decision-making pursuant to the Tongass Forest Plan. And starting with the National Environmental Policy Act, the Forest Service violated the act by failing to disclose and respond to concerns from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game regarding wolf mortality. The Ninth Circuit said in Earth Island Institute versus the Forest Service at 442 F3rd, 1172, final environmental impact statements must respond explicitly and directly to conflicting views in order to satisfy NEPA's procedural requirements. Here, despite the Forest Service's claims to the contrary in its brief, the final environmental impact statement fails to disclose, let alone respond, to expert biologists' concerns with the project, including leading wolf scientist Dr. Person. The concerns articulated in the record by the Alaska...
They did give extensive consideration to what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game represented to them, and the prior panel had looked at that and reached a conclusion. There's nothing new, and the only thing wrong with it from your point of view was the Forest Service didn't agree.
Your Honor, actually I disagree with you on 2 points. And the first point is, in the preliminary injunction appeal that was before the Ninth Circuit, the plaintiffs did not raise a claim regarding the Forest Service's disclosure obligations in the final environmental impact statement. The only issue that was raised was regarding the draft environmental impact statement. So with respect to the final environmental impact statement and the inadequacies in that document, that was not raised previously before the district court or the Ninth Circuit in the PI proceedings. And second of all, if you actually look through the record...
There's a sentence in the memorandum disposition that we issued the last time the case came up. Second, the record establishes that the Forest Service took a hard look at the potential impacts of logjam on wolves and discussed this issue extensively in the DEIS, that's draft environmental impact statement, and FEIS, that's final environmental impact statement.
That's correct, Your Honor. And what the district court had found during the preliminary injunction proceedings was any non-disclosure, and here the Forest Service did not disclose at all any of the concerns raised by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with wolf mortality in the draft environmental impact statement, but said that that problem was remedied in the final environmental impact statement.
We said that the draft was an error, but the Forest Service corrected its error in the final environmental impact statement.
So that seems like a sort of like a got you is what you're trying to say. If we want them to take a hard look, if we want them to continue to respond, what you're essentially, you know, saying that if there's something that they notice in the draft that they want to correct in the final, that's a gotcha. You can't do that.
Actually, Your Honor, there's different requirements for the information that needs to be supplied in a draft environmental impact statement and what needs to be in a final.
Are you saying, though, that they can't correct things in a final without having implications that you'll claim there's a problem?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
You don't want people to correct problems?
We absolutely want them to correct problems. That's the whole point of the National Environmental Policy Act process, is disclosure and the opportunity for comment. And if an agency never corrected problems, there would be very little point to the National Environmental Policy Act process. The problem here is the Forest Service did not correct the problem. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game raised three very serious concerns with this project. They said wolf mortality is unsustainable in the project area. And I would point the court to excerpts of record 522 and 519. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game said roe densities are too high. And I would point the court to excerpts of record 519 and 352. And the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said, we cannot fix this problem by closing hunting and trapping in the area. The burden is on the Forest Service to reduce roe density in the area. And I would point the court to excerpts of record 341 and 352. Now, if you look at the body...
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game view just one more thing that the government has to take account of and give a hard look to?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And here they didn't give it a hard look. Let's take a look. If you look at the excerpts of record and the actual final environmental impact statement at excerpts of record 269, what the Forest Service said is two biologists with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game raised wolf mortality concerns. In reality, the state, in its comments on the draft environmental impact statement, raised these concerns at excerpts of record 352. After the comment period closed, the Forest Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game exchanged letters in which, again, the state raised wolf mortality concerns. This was a concern by the expert agency that the Forest Service did not inform the public about.
Wait a minute. The Forest Service says here on 269 that it acknowledges that it received information from the state of Alaska that conflicts with the Forest Service's view.
And that's my next point, Your Honor. What the Forest Service says is that it obtained harvest data and a wolf management report from the Forest Service that do not seem to support a wolf mortality concern, correct? In the final EIS at excerpts of record 269. And in reality, what had happened is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game sent the Forest Service letters explaining, you cannot rely on our recent harvest data. It's unreliable. We closed this area to hunting in 1999, and after that, people stopped reporting hunting and trapping of wolves in that area. And they made a second point, and let me give you the cite to that, because I think that's a really critical point. That's at excerpts of record 340, the letter from Alaska Department of Fish and Game that says that. But the state also said to the Forest Service, our harvest data, our hunting and trapping data, does not account for the unlawful harvesting of wolves that occurs. There's a lot of illegal hunting and trapping of wolves, and if you just look at our harvest data, it does not account for that. Now, you can look at the final environmental impact statement. You can look at the Forest Service's response to comments, which is in the excerpts of record 297 to 300. Those concerns from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game are never disclosed to the public.
So what are you saying that's new here that you didn't already say before the district court? Did you say all this before the district court?
We said all of this before the district court in our motion for summary judgment. During the preliminary injunction proceedings, we did not raise any claims about the final environmental impact statement with respect to disclosure. So this is an entirely new claim that was raised at summary judgment. There's extensive evidence from the administrative record that shows the Alaska Department of Fish and Game raised these concerns to the Forest Service.
Let me make it concrete to make sure I understand it.
Yes.
Your issue on the wolves is that you don't think the final environmental impact statement sufficiently discloses and addresses the statement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game that their data is no good, the data they furnished to the Forest Service, because they don't know how many wolves are illegally trapped and illegally hunted. since naturally, since it's a crime, it wouldn't be reported to them.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's what the Wolf issue is about.
That's one key component of the Wolf issue. There's one additional issue that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game raised that the Forest Service never addressed. And the state said, we cannot close.
Was there data to show that that error would not be harmless, that the illegal taking of wolves is so great as to completely change what would be reasonable on this amount of logging and roads?
Yes, Your Honor, there is. And I would point you to the correspondence from Dr. Person, who's the leading wolf scientist in the state. And what he said is, if you look at our harvest data that is reliable, and on top of that, you calculate what, based on his research, has indicated is the amount of unlawful hunting and trapping that takes place.
There's a lot of unlawful hunting and trapping, well, just like there's unlawful use of marijuana and unlawful speeding. Any law, you can depend on there being unlawful instances of behavior. And was he talking specifically about wolf trapping, and did he give numbers?
Yes, he was talking specifically about wolf trapping. He did give numbers. He has a report that's in. He knows because he's one of the only scientists who's actually done ground research, and so he has set out. He has various study sites, and within those study sites, he has found unlawful leg hole traps and other evidence of unlawful hunting and trapping. So based on his on-the-ground research, he's created a tool for estimating unlawful harvest on top of the reported harvest. So he expressed in his correspondence with the Forest Service that using the reliable data from the state, using his methodology, which is the only methodology out there, in the project area, wolf mortality is unsustainable. And that's
they looked at that, right? They just didn't agree with his numbers.
I don't know what the Forest Service thought, because they never disclosed to the public what Dr. Person said. And they never responded why they could continue to rely on the state's data that the state said was unreliable. There's nothing in the environmental impact statement that provides the Forest Service's rationale for going forward with the project, despite being notified repeatedly by the state that there were problems with the data that the Forest Service was relying on. Now, whether this changes the outcome or not, for the National Environmental Policy Act, what the Forest Service had to do at least was disclose this debate to the public. They had to let the public know what the state had said. They are the expert.
Wait a minute. This expert witness that you're relying on was not part of the Forest Service, right?
That's correct.
Instead, he was reporting his data to the public.
That's correct.
So it's not as though the Forest Service kept it secret.
The data is publicly available. And actually, if you look at the report, it's available on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. The first page of the report contains a disclaimer saying...
It's in the excerpts of record somewhere.
It's not. The state
not
says
the excerpts. Why are you asking us to rely on it?
I'm not asking you to rely on it. I'm asking you to rely on the reliable data and the calculations from the actual biologists at the Alaska Department of Fish
and
Game.
I'm asking you, are his calculations here?
Yes, they are. They're in the excerpts of record at 519, and then another biologist relied on his work at excerpts of record 522 to draw the same conclusions.
Well, it's not secret.
It's secret in terms of the National Environmental Policy Act process.
You keep putting your argument in terms of the Forest Service not disclosing as though it's a secrecy case, and that keeps confusing me. I think your argument is that they did not give a hard look to the data because they didn't talk about this particular matter.
Absolutely. That's correct. But they, in addition to that, though, without even giving it a hard look.
Hiding anything from the public.
Well, they did. They hid this from the public.
How did they hide it if it's right here?
It's in correspondence that the Forest Service received, but the Forest Service never provided it.
Hiding it from the public? I thought he was reporting it to the public.
Excuse me if I didn't understand your question. The Alaska Department of Fish...
You keep making this a case of government secrecy and trickery of the public, and it looks to me like that can't possibly be true. The case has to be about whether the Forest Service adequately considered the matters that were put before it. And I don't understand either. I may be misunderstanding, and you know, we get a lot of cases I can misunderstand. And so if I am, I want you to explain to me. But I don't understand why it's a secrecy case.
Your Honor, it's both. And it's not a secrecy case, it's a non-disclosure case. And the reason that I'm focusing on the disclosure issue as well as the hard look issue is because the National Environmental Policy Act is, above all else, a disclosure statute. It's the obligation of the agency to actually disclose relevant information to the public when it's making a decision. And the Council on Environmental Quality Act, Council on Environmental Quality regulations require the Forest Service to do this at 40 CFR section 1502.9. And the agency did not abide by that.
519, it doesn't look like a scientific report. It looks like a letter to a friend. It starts, "Hi, Marla. Sorry it has taken me so long, but I've been out sick." And looks like a letter to a friend. That's what you're relying on, that they should have given more attention to?
That is Dr. Pearson saying, based on my research, I calculate that wolf mortality in this area is unsustainable. And his report, in which he lays out that information, is in both the government's excerpts of record and in our supplemental excerpts of record. So that's his summation of his research, that he was asked for his opinion by the Forest Service and he provided it. And that opinion nowhere is found in the final environmental impact statement, nor does the Forest Service take a hard look at that issue. You can look at the final environmental impact statement at excerpts of record 297, 298, 299, 267, 268, 299.
And it's the same thing. "Thanks, Boyd. Hi, Marla." It doesn't look like scientific reports at all. It's just somebody writing to a friend.
That's the correspondence in which the Forest Service, in writing the draft environmental impact statement for the logjam project, asked the state.
Is there some scientific report in here that the Forest Service did not give adequate consideration to?
Yes, there is. And I don't have the excerpts of record right at my fingertips, but I can give them to you on rebuttal and we can look at that. Because Dr. Pearson's report is in the excerpts of record in which he calculates both wolf mortality and raises these concerns with the state's data and how to account for unlawful hunting and trapping. But again, the point is clear, and as the Ninth Circuit said in the Western Watersheds Project case at 620 F3rd 1206, if an agency offers no meaningful response to serious and considered comments by experts, that agency renders the procedural requirement meaningless, an environmental impact statement, an exercise in form over substance. And, Your Honors, that is exactly what the Forest Service did here.
You have a little over 2 minutes. Do you want to reserve that?
I would like to. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning again.
Good morning again, Your Honors. I'm back. I now have some reinforcements.
So how are you going to state your name and then tell us
John
how
Smeltzer
you purport to
for
how you're going to divide time?
Right. John Smeltzer for the Forest Service. I expect to take 15 minutes of the argument. Ruth Tiger is here for intervener Viking Lumber. She will have 5 minutes. Tom Leonard is here with the intervener State of Alaska. He could answer any questions if you have from the
but
state.
15 and 5 takes 20, so that's your time.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All
absolutely.
Right.
Let me start with the NEPA question and the issue of disclosure and the whole circumstance surrounding wolf mortality impacts. And, Your Honors, the FEIS, well, let me start by saying first, the principal concern that was raised to the previous panel was a supposed limitation in the DEIS. And in the preliminary injunction phase, the TCS wasn't concerned with the FEIS, and this court, in looking at the DEIS, said, well, look, it was corrected in the FEIS, so it's not a problem. Now they want to come back and say, oh, there's also a problem with the FEIS. But there is
anytime you can use English instead of abbreviations, it would be
the final environmental impact statement as opposed to the draft, Your Honor. And if you look at the final environmental impact statement in the excerpts of record from pages 267 through 269, they address the specific concerns that were raised by Dr. Person, and then again in the appendix to the excerpts of record at pages 297 through, I believe it's 300, there is an extensive discussion of the concerns that were raised by the states, the opinion of the state biologists, and also the issue behind that opinion, the particular facts that matter to the issue. TCS has argued that there were three issues that weren't addressed.
I understood with Dr. Person as he was saying, look, we don't know how many wolves are taken there. We know what's reported to the state, but we assume people commit crimes. And the only way to protect the wolves is keep people out altogether, and roads won't keep people out altogether. I hope people get in. Is that about right?
Well, yes. I mean, in somewhat of a nutshell, but there. I mean, the concern is the concern about access for hunters, right? And of course, the concern is that when people come in, they have the ability then to trap and to hunt where they wouldn't otherwise if there are roads. It's the same concern for legal and for illegal hunting. And when we mean illegal, we just mean non-reported. That concern was addressed in the FEIS, because every time they talk about the road density and in the rest of the project record, they acknowledge it's an issue with respect to both the reported lawful taking and the unlawful taking. With respect to the unlawful non-reported, in the wildlife report that was in the project record, the Forest Service also said, look, if you take the data that's actually been reported to the state and on which the state has relied, and you double it, as Dr. Person has suggested you should do, because there may be an equal rate of unlawful hunting, that the rate of actual hunting in this area, in the project area, is still doesn't show unsustainable harvest. And again, the question is, you take the modeling, and Dr. Person did a study where he did a model, and he equated, positively correlated, wolf takes with road density. And then he assumed, based on that information, that there would be a certain amount of take in a certain amount of area based on the amount of road density there is in that area. And so what the Forest Service is saying, look, we understand the model, and they say it at excerpts of record 267, we acknowledge the road density calculations done by Dr. Person would indicate the possibility of an unsustainable wolf harvest in the wildlife analysis area. However, the actual reported data of this wildlife analysis area does not indicate a harvest level that would be unsustainable. And then in the wildlife report, they explain that's true even if it's double. And they also go on and they quote extensively from not only the data, they provide the data in the FEIS, but they quote from the state's own wildlife management report. And of course, the state uses the data for the reason of managing the wildlife. And the 2006 report that was presented to the Forest Service, in addition to the other stuff that was provided by the state of Alaska, and I'll quote, it says, we believe the Unit 2 wolf population has remained stable during this reporting period. The number of Unit 2 trappers who successfully catch wolves each year is declining, perhaps mirroring the slow declining local human population and an aging trapper pool. And then it goes on. But what we have is the official state data not correlating the model, okay? And that's fully disclosed in the FEIS. The other thing the court needs to understand is this is a pre-existing problem. It's a problem that because the Forest Service chose this area, as we explained in the brief, because it was an already roaded area, and that would minimize impacts. And what the debate that's going on here in the record is between the wildlife biologist and the Forest Service with respect to the data as to what is the harm from the pre-existing road system. It's not specifically a question about the project, because the project record is clear that the project's not going to significantly increase the road density. It's a question about the pre-existing road density, and is that an issue? And that's important, because what the Forest Service ultimately determined was, yes, there will be a slight increase in road density, but we're not going to have a change to the status quo that's going to change the problem here, even if it is a problem, right? The Forest Service acknowledged that, yes, these concerns have been brought to us. Yes, we understand these concerns, but we're not changing that situation. There's already these roads here. And, Your Honor, I would like to draw your attention to Dr. Person's scientific analysis, which is in the record, and not just the letters. And this is what the supplemental excerpts of records. We also have part of it in the in our supplemental, but this is TCS's supplemental excerpts, and I'm referring to page 17 of the supplemental excerpts. And the bottom paragraph begins, and I'll quote, "Road density is an important predictor of harvest." And this is where he's talking about correlating road density to harvest. Then he goes on, "Nonetheless, that relation deteriorated at road densities greater than 0.9 kilometers per square kilometer, which probably represented a threshold beyond which further increases in road density had little detectable effect on rates of harvest."
I'm reading Persons here, and he says it makes no difference once you go above that level?
That's correct. What Dr. Person is saying is, look, this is our data. This is our data set. We've correlated road density with harvest, but the correlation falls apart once you get above a threshold. The road density in the project level was already well above that threshold. We reported that in the DEIS. We reported it in the FEIS. And we reported the state's concerns. But ultimately, I think you should also look at Dr. Person's conclusion of the study, and that's on page, it's hard to read, 18 of the supplemental excerpts, and it's the final line of the penultimate paragraph. And he says, "Therefore, we conclude that a combination of conservative harvest regulations and large roadless reserves likely are the most effective measure for conserving wolves where risks from human-caused mortality are high." Let me talk about the first part of that, conservative harvest regulations. One of the things they say we didn't address was this thing, the point about you can't close the project area. In the FEIS, we mentioned that. We mentioned their comment in the appendix that you can't close the harvest area, but you can close the game management unit, and the state hasn't done it since 1999. And Dr. Person says, well, if you've got a problem, you can have a conservative harvest regulation, and you can address it. And that's what we said in the FEIS. There are closures that could work. What's also said by Dr. Person is what really matters is maintaining the old growth reserves to provide the habitat, the roadless habitat, that the wolves need. What's in the briefs is a concern that was raised by the state about a lack of connectivity between the two of these old growth reserves was worked out between the Forest Service and the state after the ROD was announced, and the state no longer has any concern about the project-related impacts. And again, this is all about the project. There may yet be a concern overall about wolf sustainability or mortality based on road densities in this area, but this is about the project. The state is satisfied with the project. The project is not changing the status quo according to their own experts.
Your bottom line is you said you took a hard look?
We took a hard look. We definitely took a hard look.
Okay.
We took a hard look at the other issues.
In the reply brief, the appellants argue that they show that the Forest Service acted arbitrarily, capriciously, and contrary to law, and that this court should issue an injunction. Do you agree, or why not?
I disagree because we didn't violate the law, Your Honor. We took a hard look under NEPA, and we complied with all aspects of the forest plan. If there are other questions about noncompliance with the statutes, I'd be happy to address them. Ms. Tiger was going to address the injunction issues.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ruth Tiger for Viking Lumber Company, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Morning. In answer to your last question, Judge Callahan, we certainly do not agree that the plaintiffs have in any way demonstrated entitlement to a permanent injunction in this case. First and foremost, of course, we agree with federal appellees that the district court correctly denied the appellant's motion for summary judgment, and this court should affirm on the merits. You only get to the question of injunctive relief, of course, if you determine that the appellee...
The clock's not going. Mine isn't, anyway.
No, nor is mine. There we go. You only get to the question of injunctive relief, of course, if you make a determination in the first instance that the appellants succeed on the merits, and we submit that they do not. But assuming that they have convinced you, they have to meet the second prong of the test, which means they have to meet all four elements of the requirements for injunctive relief, and they simply cannot do that in this case. And principally because the last two elements for injunctive relief, the balance of harms and the public interest, do not fall in favor of the appellants. As articulated in the declarations included in the record in this case, if the logjam project is enjoined, this will lead, while not immediately, but will lead to the closure of Viking Lumber Company as an ongoing business in Southeast Alaska. I don't want to go through things that are already in the record, other than to say that this company provides jobs, this company provides community infrastructure, and the loss of this company to Alaska, to Southeast Alaska in particular, not only would be to the detriment of these individual people, but would also be contrary to the public interest as expressed by Congress in the Tongass Timber Reform Act. We recognize, of course, that NEPA expresses Congress's interest in compliance with environmental law. Tongass Timber Reform Act also expresses Congress's interest in the continuing maintenance of the timber industry in Southeast Alaska. In their reply brief, the appellants seek to convince this court that you need not reach the question of injunction, and that if you find for them on the merits of any of their claims, that they automatically get the project thrown out. And that is contrary to the precedent both of this court and the Supreme Court, that the appellants need to meet their obligation to demonstrate entitlement to an injunction. And finally, the appellants, contrary to the requirements of the Tongass Timber Reform Act, claim that they're sympathetic to the economic realities that are faced by Viking, yet they ask the court to ignore those concerns.
We have a lot of cases in environmental law where I don't think we've called it that in the cases, but we've applied what environmentalists like to call the precautionary principle. If we're not sure that there's a hard enough look and we're not sure that the government has proved that the project can go ahead with no harm, then it must be enjoined, regardless of how destructive that is to humans who live in the area.
I don't think...
Is that dead under the Winter case?
I think that is dead. Under Winter and additionally under Monsanto, the court made very clear that you don't put a thumb on the scales. The environment does not trump the concern to people. And in this case in particular, we're not simply talking about the loss of jobs. We're talking about the closure of essentially the last remaining mid-sized sawmill in Southeast Alaska. Congress, in the Tongass Timber Reform Act in particular, expressly stated that that is contrary to the public interest. So even if, I'm agreeing with you that it's dead, I don't believe it survives after winter, but even if environmental harm is established and it is irreparable, there is irreparable harm that would occur in this case, and that in terms of the shutdown of the Viking mill. And that needs to be balanced, should you get to that, which we don't think you ever do. So ultimately, in weighing those harms and in weighing where the public interest lies, the appellants have the burden. They cannot meet the burden. And the court, should it even get to the question, should deny the request for injunctive relief.
Thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
This matter does not yet stand submitted. There's a short rebuttal, I think. There we go. You have about 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. So first, Judge Kleinfeld, just to finish our discussion, as you heard from counsel from the Forest Service, Dr. Pearson's study is in the plaintiff's excerpts of supplemental excerpts of record, pages 13 to 18, and in the defendant's supplemental excerpts of record at 270. That was a study about radio-collared wolves, and so he was well aware when his wolves were taken unlawfully and unreported because they were wearing radio collars. So they disappeared from a study area. You heard a lot of information from the Forest Services Council about why the Forest Service believed it took a hard look here. But nowhere can they point to a site within the record where the agency explains why it can rely on data that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said is unreliable. All of the Forest Service's calculations use recent harvest data that Alaska Department of Fish and Wildlife said.
This discussion of Dr. Person's study at 267 through 269 adequate?
Your Honor, it's adequate, but I would caution the use of his findings. He said the correlation between increased road densities and increased hunting and trapping falls apart at some point, and that's correct. But that study nevertheless finds, and I would point the court to plaintiff's supplemental excerpts of record 13, that roads are incredibly harmful for wolves. So the fact that you're not going to see this, you know, doubling of wolf hunting and trapping an area.
But what once that all sounds like is you disagree with their conclusion, not that they didn't consider it.
And that's not, in fact, what happened here. What the agency never said to the public is why, if wolf mortality is a concern in the project area, it can continue to increase road densities when its own forest plan at excerpts of record 524 says that all roads, whether they're open or closed, contribute to wolf mortality. The Forest Service simply never provides that explanation to the public. It never says, when wolf mortality is a concern, we have to grapple with road densities. We're going to continue to increase road densities here. That's one of the three things we can do to manage wolf mortality, and we're going to make the problem worse. The agency never explains why it can continue to do that.
All right, your time has expired. This matter will now stand submitted, and this court is in recess.
All rise. This court for this session stands adjourned.